1% increase in growth, the impact on valuation is the same as a 3% increase in profitability, even today. So growth is just valued at 3 times profitability, even today. And that number was about 12x in November 2021, so at the height of the bull market. So growth is, in our mind, still really important. And if you want to build a big business, you just have to grow.
Welcome to the SaaS Revolution Show, a podcast by SaaS.com. Here we interview SaaS founders from around the world who've been there and done that. They share the ins and outs of how they built their businesses, their operations, their path to securing investment, and more. Our mission with the podcast is to help you, the founder, learn how to scale your SaaS, maintain your well-being, and navigate the complexities of this ever-changing industry. I'm your host, Alex Diemer, and together we'll explore the good, the bad, and the ugly in the journey to SaaS success. All right, welcome back to the SaaS Revolution Show. I'm your host, Alex Thumer, CEO and founder of SaaS.com, and I am delighted today to be joined by David Klein, who is the co-founder and managing partner at OnePeak. Welcome, David. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me, Alex.
Good to have you on the podcast. I understand you would have been in person at a board meeting today. You talked about it's board meeting season. So I'm glad that we're able to connect. You've got a very busy couple of weeks ahead of you with all these board meetings and a bit of travel there. Let's jump into it, David. Like, would love to, you know, kick off the show just to let the audience, you know, find out a little bit more about you. So I want to ask the question: who is David Klein?
Yeah, so I'm one of four kids in my family. So I grew up with a number of siblings, and it was always very lively and lots of action in the house. I'm the only one that ended up going into investing. Everyone else in the family is in healthcare. So I'm the black sheep to a certain extent in the family there. Grew up in a small town in Germany. When I was 16, received a scholarship from the American Congress and German Bundestag to spend a year in the U.S. Ended up living in Indiana, so in the middle of nowhere, like literally a hog farm on one side and cornfields on the other side. Then came back, finished school, studied. Started my career at Morgan Stanley in London, first on the M&A side and the technology, media, and telecoms team, then moved over to the principal side, spent 5 years in what's called Morgan Stanley Principal Investments, so managing the bank's own investments in rapidly growing tech businesses. Then moved over to Summit Partners, was responsible for software investing there, did that for a number of years, and then started OnePeak in 2014 together with my co-founder, Humbert. So we're coming up to the 10 years this year. It feels like it was yesterday.
Awesome. Congrats. Yeah, I mean, similarly, SaaS.com is in its 9th year, but it just doesn't seem like it's 9 years, right? And it feels like we're getting old, but still a startup. I remember SaaS.com 2016, the first one, just as if it was yesterday. How was it living in Indiana? How long were you there for? What was that experience like?
It was a phenomenal experience. I was there for a little more than a year, did my senior year in high school there. And of course, did a number of different sports, basketball, tennis, track and field, lived the American lifestyle, which was really not the New York or California type of lifestyle, but it was very much the what you see in the middle of the two coasts. And I had a great time, wouldn't want to miss it, first time away from home. Fun fact is actually that my flight to Indiana was the first flight I'd ever taken as a kid. How things have changed.
Yeah. And you mentioned, so you were at Summit Partners, but then decided to create OnePeak together with Humbert. Tell us a little bit about why you decided to branch out on your own and found OnePeak. What's the founding story there?
Yeah, so that was back in 2014, and we had been talking for a while. And we were looking for a great market opportunity. And that market opportunity was just in front of our door, because what had happened is that all the traditional growth equity funds like the TA Associates and General Atlantic and Summit Partners of the world all started relatively small. And then with success came larger funds. Larger funds mean larger minimum equity checks, and therefore you just move into a different market segment. We were in a spot where both of us actually had to pass on a lot of really interesting companies because they were too small from an equity check perspective. And therefore, what we decided to do is to spend a little bit more time looking at that market segment. Initially, when we started, it was $20 to $50 million in equity tickets. And what's out there in the market? Is there a brand? Is there someone that really dominates that market in Europe? And it was shocking. There was literally no one. There was quite some money on the venture side, and then there was quite some money on the, call it 100 million plus equity ticket side of things. So there was this big market opportunity in the middle, and we said, well, why don't we work on it and then see what we do? It took us probably 6 months or so to develop a deck, develop a strategy, think about what we want to do. But then over New Year's, once we sat together and said, we can't do this next to our full-time job. So we resign and we do this full-time, or we stop and we just continue with our careers. And that was basically the moment where it was the come to Jesus moment to a certain extent. And both of us then decided to resign on the same day and start One Peak. And the remainder is history. So it was really the market opportunity that drove us there.
Also, and fast forward to today, 10 years later, can you share some data, you know, around One Peak in terms of, I guess, how much under management that you have, how many investments that you've made, size of team, that sort of thing, maybe even like typical check size and that sort of thing?
Yeah, very happy to do so. So we have $2 billion in assets under management now. We're investing out of our Fund 3, which is a $1 billion fund. We closed that in late 2022. It's about 30% invested by now, so still lots of capital that's looking for a new home. We write checks between $20 and $100 million per investment, and then we can go up from there and scale with our existing companies, as we typically reserve about a third of our equity for any future investments in the companies. We want to be really supportive of the companies that we back. We're typically pretty concentrated in what we do. So we're not a venture fund, but we're a growth fund, and that means Fund 1 was a $300 million fund. We made 8 investments out of that. Fund 2 was a $500 million fund. We made 11 investments out of that. Fund 3 is a $1 billion fund. We'll make 16 to 18 investments out of that. So we spend a lot of time looking at the best software companies in Europe. Europe means not just continental Europe and the UK, but also Israel, which is an integral part of that. And what we have seen in the market is that over the years, when we started, the number of companies that were 10 million plus in annual recurring revenues was really, really small, where you could probably count it on a couple of hands in each of the big countries. Now, that market segment has gotten so much deeper. There's so many interesting companies out there. We start at 5 million annual recurring revenues as an absolute minimum, and we need at least 50% in terms of growth rate, because, of course, if you're a 5 million ARR business and you're growing less than that, you're never going to become a sizable business. So this is where we sit. We've made 22 investments, exited 2 of those. 4 of our companies are unicorns by now and have grown really sizable. We have a team of 25 that's in the office works on a permanent basis. And then we have, in addition to that, what we call a value creation team that's composed of almost 10 really world-class operators in sales, marketing, product, tech, and talent. So all the key value levers that help our companies accelerate their growth. And then on top of that, we have an advisory board. So if you add all of that up, we'll get to around 40 people at One Peak at this point in time.
Talking of like the best software companies, I mean, certainly some of the ones that stand out to me that, I mean, I don't know, like every software company, there's so many now, but like DocPlanner, PandaDoc, Neo4j, these are some of the companies that you've made growth investments in. Maybe could you pick one, or you could go left field and pick another, and just kind of really explain maybe a little bit about how you came about that investment. What was it that made them the best software company, attractive? You know, what the process kind of looked like, a bit of a story, and perhaps one of those deals.
Yeah, very happy to. I'll pick Neo4j. It's a $200 million ARR business right now. When we invested, it was a $33 million ARR business. And we were trying to get through to Emil Afram, who's the founder of Neo4j. He's been doing a phenomenal job building that business, and it's really, really deep tech. It's a graph database software business with a number of really interesting use cases like knowledge graphs and real-time recommendation engines and fraud prevention and so on. We then got an introduction to Emil, and I did a video call with him which back in the days in 2017 was really out of the ordinary. Usually you would just have a normal phone call, and got along super well. Instead of 30 minutes, spent an hour and a half. The next week, I ended up going to Malmö, Sweden, where he's based, spent a few hours with him, and then started building the relationship from there. And then when he started thinking about his next fundraise, I was there. I had built the relationship, and at that point in time, we were able to move really fast and then preempt a broader fundraise and make that investment. So we spend a lot of time in the market building relationships with founders, showing our value add, making introductions to customers and talent, and making sure that we're there when companies then kick off a fundraise or really want to accelerate their own growth.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And I know we wanted to discuss, talk a little bit about the market and where it is sort of right now, and obviously compared to last year, and especially, around the growth stage. So shall we get into that and let's kind of like get your viewpoints around the market? Interestingly, I mean, like today, I was having an email conversation with somebody who's still or believes, and perhaps sort of rightly, that there is a, I think he used the word SaaS crunch, and you know he's kind of keeping his powder dry because he doesn't believe that he's going to see sort of much improvement this year. Just sharing that anecdotally before we get into kind of your viewpoints, but would love to kind of hear your viewpoints around the market and what's happening in SaaS specifically.
Yeah, it's a really interesting market. I think if we take a step back and look at where we've come from a world where in the early 2010s, SaaS was still a very new market. Most software companies were still on-premise. Then SaaS started growing quite significantly, but multiples were still relatively low, and people were more looking at what's the profitability of those businesses, then afterwards started looking at ARR multiples. And then, of course, things got really crazy in 2021 and early 2022 when interest rates were low. And then, of course, in 22 and especially in 23, interest rates went up quite significantly. Inflation went up. Then we, of course, have quite some geopolitical instability, especially around Europe. So if we look at Ukraine, if we look at Israel. What this has done to the market really is that money is not free anymore as it used to be in 21. And as a result of that, companies just need to be more efficient. But also as a result of that, it's just harder to sell. If you're mission critical, you're still selling, but the selling sales cycle is longer, budgets are tighter, there's more pressure on pricing, and so on. So what we're seeing is that in broad terms, growth rates in the software market have come down. And then the question is, what's going to happen this year? And we think it's probably going to be slightly different in the U.S. versus Europe. So the U.S. is probably much more likely to end in a soft landing, whilst Europe, given we have two wars, given we probably have the worst macro situation, unemployment is higher and so on and so on, we do think that probably it'll be harder for companies in Europe to sell to European customers, and therefore growth rates will probably be slightly lower. So what we're seeing in the market right now is really a bit of a divergence. You got those companies that grow 100% plus, that also grew 100% plus last year and are expecting to do the same this year. There, people still pay really high multiples because there's just not that many of them, and many of the early stage venture funds have not really done anything last year. Last year was very illiquid because companies raised in 21 and 22 had enough cash, extended runway with venture debt or with saves, and therefore felt that in 23 they needed to build out their business a little bit more in order not to have to do a down round. And what we have really seen is the return of the Series A and the Series B earlier this year. And I think that's going to be a theme also for the remainder of the year. So that's the fast growing part of the market. Then you got that part of the market that is distressed, that has a few months of liquidity left. And these are companies that are highly likely to get consolidated by one of their competitors. And we're seeing a lot of that in our portfolio. I think we've already made three or four bolt-on acquisitions this year. We're in exclusivity for two more across the portfolio. And this is going to be a really interesting trend for this year. And I think that this will go into 2025 as well. And then you've got that part of the market that is in between, which is the majority of the market, where growth has come down a bit. It's still good, but not amazing. Efficiency is better than before, but not great yet. And so I think that's where we really need to see where that part of the market goes and how this goes through 2024. And some founders have managed to clean up and have become a lot more efficient. But surprisingly, we're seeing a lot of companies that are out fundraising now where the burn is still way too high, but at a growth rate which is much lower compared to 2021. So I think these guys are going to struggle a lot more to fundraise. So I think there's a lot of pain that will come in 2024 for companies, because most of that bucket of companies have money until between summer of 24 and summer of 25. So they will have to raise in the next 12 months. And I think that's where the jury is still out.
And on that, I mean, I've been seeing, and I know you're at the later stage, but at like the early stage, like a lot of bridge rounds, certainly at seed, between seed and Series A, because it's harder. The metrics seem to, or the goalposts shifted to raise Series A now in terms of what you need. I just welcome your viewpoint, whilst it's not the specific area that you invest in, just around how you view bridge rounds. Like, is it just a necessary evil? I don't know. There's obviously got a negative connotation around it. But, you know, given that the goalposts have shifted and it is harder to raise a Series A now, like, do you view on them perhaps sort of like slightly negatively? And, you know, again, I've seen some memes about bridge rounds and it's just like, you know, burning money and so on. But yeah, just kind of welcome your viewpoints around that, because it obviously seems to be a lot more, but logically because of where the market is, right?
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. I think the way we think about bridge rounds at One Peak is, what are you bridging towards? If you're bridging a cash shortfall of 6 months, for example, or of 9 months, where you have a healthy core business, which is mission critical, real strategic value at an exit, but you've just burned too much in 21 and 22, you've decreased that burn, you're on the right path, and all the indicators are pointing into the right direction, you're just short a little bit of capital. That's a bridge round I would take any day, because I think this is really interesting, and that's a great investment to be made. There are other bridge rounds where you're bridging towards hoping that something will improve in the underlying business. And these are the kind of bridge rounds that we wouldn't do. And I think that the vast majority of other people wouldn't do. And that's why I'm saying a lot of people are out in the market to try to raise those bridge rounds right now. And that a number of those are just not going to happen. And therefore, you'll see a little bit more pain, especially for those companies that are just not mission critical, are not don't have that strategic value, or don't have that efficiency mindset coupled with growth going forward. And by the way, I think the market has probably shifted a little bit too far. In 2021, it was all about growth, growth, growth. We don't care about profitability. We at Bumpeak, of course, never did that because we're a growth fund. We're not a venture fund. But when you look at it now, a lot of people have shifted focus and focus a lot more on profitability. But if you look at the public markets and see how public markets value growth versus profitability, you will see that a 1% increase in growth, the impact on valuation is the same as a 3% increase in profitability, even today. So growth is just valued at 3x profitability even today. And that number was about 12x in November 2021, so at the height of the bull market. So growth is, in our mind, still really important. And if you want to build a big business, you just have to grow.
In less than 3 weeks, SaaStock USA will be in full swing in Austin, Texas. We'll be meeting industry friends, having some quality team bonding time, enjoying Austin's best-rated barbecue, and more. Our event networking app is launching soon, and if history is any indicator, meetings will start getting booked in ASAP. Founder to founder to investor, startup to seasoned SaaS legend, it's all going to kick off in Austin. Use code SaaSREV to get 20% off remaining tickets. We'll see you there.
Are you a software company struggling to navigate the complex world of payments? We get it. Getting paid should be simple, but as you grow, it gets complicated. Different currencies, payment methods, regulations, and taxes, it's enough to make anyone's head spin. But Paddle's got your back. We handle tax, payments, billing, subscriptions, fraud, and so much more all across the globe. Paddle does the heavy lifting so you can focus on what really matters, your products and your growth. Get started at paddle.com.
Given that, let's say, perhaps the feeling is a little bit more bullish this year than the previous year, but still there's going to be, I think, as you said, some pain for a lot of companies, from 24 to 25. From your growth investing perspective, I mean, like there, again, there has been very few growth deals done over the last sort of like 12 months. I'm curious to know how many you guys did, were you just kind of waiting it out? I think a lot of people were sitting on the dry powder and perhaps obviously doing very few deals. And how you view that to this year, for one peak. So obviously you're looking for the exceptional companies, and they do exist. And we've seen, I think, like Muse hit 100 million, Muse.com hit 100 million ARR, became recent sort of European unicorn and through good business performance and not overinflated sort of valuation there. There's probably going to be fewer European unicorns crowned this year, but how do you view, like, personally from one peak, like 2024 calendar, from getting deals done, do you expect that we're going to do some but fewer and then hopefully more in 2025? Or do you think we plan to do this many deals per year and we're going to get them done and we're going to find those companies?
Yeah, we're very much open to business. In a normal year, and I think I mentioned that before, we're quite concentrated. In a normal year, we'll make 4 to 6 new investments. 2023 was a little less liquid in terms of market, so we made 2 new investments and in a company called Highgraph on the CMS software side of things, really interesting business out of Germany. And then we invested in a business called IP Fabric out of the Czech Republic. In 2024, we've already made an investment in a cybersecurity-focused business that targets the SMB market called Coral. There was a 100 million round. We did 70 million out of that. that. And we expect to make somewhere between 4 and 6 investments this year, because I think we now have a much better view on where the broader macroeconomic environment is going to go. We're probably more towards the tail end of the downturn, which makes it easier to forecast. And also now you can see which businesses are really mission critical, because if they're mission critical, they will have grown last year and they will have grown the year before. Koro is a good example. That's a 50 million ARR business now, so 50, and it tripled last year and tripled the year before, and we're expecting it to more than double this year, right? So these are the type of businesses that we get really, really excited about. So we think 2024 is going to be an interesting year from a new investment perspective, but it will be harder for companies to raise, because everyone will have to raise at some point in time in the next 12 months. There's less capital available in the market. You may know that in 2021, more than 50% of the invested capital came from what's called alternative sources. So from the crossover funds, from the long onlys, from family offices, and so on. So players that are typically not in the software investing market and that have largely withdrawn at this point in time. And we expect from a company perspective that probably more companies will want to raise or will need to raise this year compared to 2021, but at different valuation levels and just with a lot less dollars chasing these investments. So it's going to be a very interesting year from that perspective.
Awesome. Well, thanks for your perspective around the market. Sort of really useful, and enjoyed hearing that. I want to move into the quickish fire round now, David. Would love to know what one thing has moved the needle the most for you in your career.
Yeah, it was surely my time in Morgan Stanley Principal Investments. So there was I spent 5 years there. It was an interesting time, because for 3 years, it was all about making great growth investments, going out, finding the best companies. Then Lehman went bust, and suddenly the bank totally restructured. We weren't allowed to make any new investments. We took over the entire portfolio of the hedge fund. We took over the entire portfolio of the distressed investment unit at Morgan Stanley, and we went overnight from 1 to 4 billion, and each of us went overnight from 3 to about 35 portfolio companies. So you can imagine how crazy busy it was at that point in time. But that allowed us to see at scale what happens in a downturn like the 2008-2009 downturn, where given we had inherited a lot of also distressed businesses, where we had to do debt to equity swaps, we had to change management teams, we had to go out really underwrite potential new avenues for businesses and put some small check to work in our existing portfolio companies in order to protect our investment. So this was probably the time where I learned the most. And this was probably also the time where I got to see at scale what can go wrong in a downturn. And therefore, we never went to those crazy heights in 2021. And therefore, also today, we're probably a lot more aggressive than other people, because we think it's the right time to be aggressive.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And what about the best advice you've ever received?
So the best advice I've ever received was probably from my dad, who said, whatever you do, just remember it's all about the people. And I think that's right. I think you need to over-index on hiring the best people for your own business. So at One Peak, we spend a lot of time on talent and on recruiting. We also spend a lot of time with our portfolio companies on finding the right people. And I think time and time again, it has shown that if you bring the right people that make a difference on board, you're building a phenomenal business. So I think that's probably the best advice I've ever received.
100% agree. What about biggest failure or mistake that you've made and lesson learned from that?
Yeah, so there's no class on how to build a fund. Therefore, of course, we made lots of mistakes along the way. I think the biggest mistake we probably consistently made in the early years was hiring too late. We should have brought on board, for example, a finance director earlier. We should have expanded the team quicker. We should have brought on board our first GC faster, and so on. So I think that is probably something where we just needed to move faster. And that's something that I also tell all of our portfolio companies that we invest in. it's never too early to hire a CFO, for example. We hear that very, very often. Oh, I'm not at that stage yet. I can probably go forward for another year as we're doing it right now. But then once the person is on board, you realize if that's a really great hire, how much value they add. And therefore, bringing the best people on board, and ideally people that are smarter than yourself. So I love to hire people that are smarter than I am.
Yeah, likewise, for sure. What about the hardest thing about being a growth equity investment firm?
So I think when you're a growth fund, the businesses that you back go through different stages that just require different processes, different talent, different ways of scaling the business. And the 0 to 10 stage is totally different than the 10 to 50 million in ARR stage. And that one is then totally different compared to if you want to scale a business to the hundreds of millions of ARR. And going through those shifts together with our portfolio companies, understanding who is scaling well throughout those different shifts and who is not, and then putting in the right people in order to make sure we manage that scale well. I think that's always the biggest challenge for a portfolio company. And we also always feel that within all of that, probably the biggest challenge tends to be on the sales and marketing side. So the go-to-market side, because that's always the biggest pain point.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much every founder that we speak to at SaaS.com, we always ask, what are the challenges, problems, and sales and go-to-market is always number one. People probably number two. What's your favorite book on business and why?
Yeah, so I can give you a couple of favorite non-business books because I read so much for work. So when I read, I try to read non-business books. And the two that I find really interesting, one is called From Beirut to Jerusalem by Thomas Friedman. Talks about the Middle Eastern conflict, how it came about, and is, of course, very relevant given latest developments, but also extremely well written in order to understand why we have a huge trust issue and why we're going through what we're going through. And then the second one is more of a hobby of mine around longevity. There's a book called Outlive, The Science and Art of Longevity by Dr. Peter Attia, which I would also recommend. That's one that I read a few months ago whilst on vacation, and it opened up a lot of different opportunities and also probably a lot of different ways of spending additional money.
Yeah, I got that for Christmas, and I'm halfway through that. But I used to read one book at a time, and now I seem to have like three or four on the go and get sucked into one. But I will finish that. But it is definitely a good one. I know we're in talks and working on getting you and One Peak, at SaaS.com in Dublin in October. But before then, where can people find you online, find out more about One Peak? If they want to reach out, listening to the podcasts and have some questions, maybe they are these, 10 million ARR, 50% sort of year over year growth businesses, and, would be interested in speaking to you.
Yeah, so you can find us online at onepeak.tech, or my email is david@onepeak.tech. So email me at any point in time. I'd love to have a conversation with you.
Especially if you're doing triple, triple, double, double.
Exactly right.
Good stuff. David Klein, thank you so much for being a great guest on the SaaS Revolution show today. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much. And hopefully looking forward to seeing you in Dublin in October.
I look forward to it as well, Alex. And thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the SaaS Revolution show. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you learned something from it, check out saasdoc.com/events to find all the upcoming SaaS.com conferences around the world.
Want exclusive SaaS content and actionable insights to grow your SaaS? Join our community of over 36,000 SaaS founders at saasdoc.com.